I'm Ed the Sock, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network, powered by your support on patreon.com/FU Network TV and through PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. And now, here's your show.
Now, let's listen.
Hey, ladies, the Hey Ladies podcast is back with another heavy topic, domestic abuse in the COVID-19 lockdown, or whatever you want to call the lockdown. That's a voluntary lockdown, but let's face it, it's a lockdown. Michelle Badusky, one of our returning panelists, has done a podcast on her Keeping It Real podcast, also on the FU Network, not shameless plug. About the situation where she lives outside of Brandon, Manitoba, on this. So Michelle's with me, producer and playwright Rose Garden is, Rose Jardine. I have been listening to the government stuff in English and in French this week, so I just translated Rose's last name. Forgive me. She's a life coach and a youth advocate who uses the arts as a catalyst to bring to light a variety of social issues for the purposes of dialogue, community engagement, and social change. And that is prescient for this because we are talking about the idea they have found that in Wuhan province in China, they had an uptick in domestic violence during the lockdown in China. Domestic violence and domestic abuse advocates are bracing for a similar issue across Canada. Ontario put out a release on April 2nd that the government's releasing an additional $4 million to support victims and frontline justice staff. $2.7 million is going directly to support services. One lump sum, $2.7 million for services for victims of domestic violence and other violent crimes during the COVID-19 crisis. Michelle, I know you're really involved with this in your province as well. So let's start there. For people who haven't heard the Keeping It Real podcast, which I strongly recommend everybody listens to, what's going on out in Manitoba right now on this issue?
Well, you know what? It's and I love the shameless plugs, but
not so shameless plug.
Not so shameless.
This is a shameful issue. Yeah.
You know what it is, yeah. And I think one thing that people don't realize, we tend to think of, you know, domestic violence or intimate partner violence as almost like an urban thing, right? The more people you have, the more relevant or the more prevalent it is. But we know statistically in Canada, rural Manitoba and rural Saskatchewan actually have the highest per capita instances of intimate partner violence in the country. Mm-hmm. You know, we're rural, we're isolated, and stress is high right now. It's even higher. We're kind of in the area here in Brandon where we are attached. We have kind of our own little oil patch going on outside of Brandon. We're very heavily connected with the oil industry in that area. So stress has been high for a really long time. And on my podcast, it was very local, but I spoke to the executive director of our Westman Women's Shelter and our Meredith's Place. I've done a few different interviews and fundraisers for them, which is transitional housing, mm-hmm. because these two centers supply all the resources, counseling, and housing for victims of domestic violence who are leaving or want to leave for the entire area.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we have, when you think about it, let's say Toronto, you have a big, huge urban population. You have all these different resources where ours are really central to Brandon. But mm-hmm. we might be dealing with people who are trying to leave a relationship or are living in a relationship that are out on a farm or, you know, a 2-hour drive or a 3-hour drive from the nearest crisis center. So it poses this other level of accessibility that people living in urban centers don't always think of. And it's kind of unique. In that way that, you know, we have to worry about transportation. If you're trying to leave an abusive or violent relationship, but you don't have a vehicle, how do you get there? You know, these are just, you know, kind of unique things to our area, But right now with, you know, finances, we just announced just the other day, it's only been 2 days here in Manitoba that we've announced the school closures indefinitely, and they've shut down all non-essential businesses. We're about 2 weeks behind Ontario. So we're seeing the crackdown coming. Mm-hmm. And that scares the hell out of me when it comes, you know, I keep saying on my social media, you know, that's my hashtag is stay the fuck home, right? The faster and sooner everybody stays home, the faster we'll get through this. But for too many people, home isn't safe.
Yeah.
And that scares me. And it's not just for the adult victims. Don't get me wrong. My heart breaks for them. But all of a sudden, these children who maybe the only meal they got was our breakfast program at school, or the only safe, loving, or, you know, relatively welcoming place they had was school. That's now been taken away from them with no end in sight. That's pretty scary.
Yeah, it's not just, I mean, it's a pressurized situation, isn't it? I've been cringing every time someone in the media says, you know, this is going to cause domestic abuse or domestic violence or child abuse. And it's like, how could an educated person say that close quarters causes abuse? It facilitates abuse or adds stressors to the abuse. But Rose, I know you had close brushes with this stuff as a youth worker. Let's shift to the urban situation in sort of dense populations. What are the issues there? Because it's almost that conspiracy of silence thing that kicks in. I mean, people are living in crappy apartments with thin walls. They can hear what's going on next door, but nobody does anything because it's quote unquote not your business, right?
Well, I don't even think it has anything to do with like urban environment. Well, yes, actually, no. When we look at urban in the whole aspect of urban, you know, when you're talking about abuse is something that comes from somebody's own personal issues projected onto somebody else. Right. I mean, I live on the waterfront.
Yeah.
Downtown Toronto. And I remember this was just a couple of months ago. There was a couple that were knocking the doors on our floor. And I opened the door and she was talking to me and she's like, you know, we're thinking about changing our unit to your floor.
Okay.
So I'm listening to her and she's like, yeah, you know, there's a domestic abuse situation going on our floor. And she was pregnant. She was like 8.5 months pregnant. She goes, okay. I can't handle it. I can't handle hearing it. I live on the waterfront. Right.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Now, under no circumstances have I ever seen the police called. You know, there was no talk of, well, you know, she needs help or whoever it is, because it could have been male or female. I'm not sure of the situation.
Right.
Because I'm not on that floor, but their solution was to, instead of intervene, remove themselves completely from the situation.
Oh, my God.
And I, as much as we're all kind of shocked, I kind of understand that perspective, right? Because a lot of people do not know what to do when they're bystanders or witnesses to any sort of abuse.
Well, there's a difference.
Yeah.
If I am in a unit in my own house and there is domestic violence happening that is loud enough for me to hear in the hallway.
Yeah.
I'm dialing 911.
Absolutely.
I'm dialing 911 and I'm telling the police, look, I do not want to be identified. I do not want anybody knocking my door, but the abuse is in this apartment. If you buzz me, I will buzz you in. That's different. That's different than seeing public abuse happening and intervening, because now you're putting your life in jeopardy. At that point, it might be better to walk away, secretly call the police, maybe do some videotaping or something, whatever in that specific, but to actually, there's been lots of people who have actually lost their life in the midst of getting involved in a domestic situation that is random on the street. It's a totally different situation.
I mean, that's the scenario. That's the really awful truth about this. I mean, I've spoken to police about this phenomenon, and a lot of cops off the record have said they hate domestic abuse calls. Because they're fraught. Often, you know, they can't force someone to leave their own home. They have to go voluntarily, or the person claiming abuse has to say, yes, I want them removed. Often the shame will not just stop them from saying that, but they will become verbally abusive to the police officer that was called. And this is the thing that has me very concerned and has me want to deal with this, because there's a protocol for people who are ready to leave abusive relationships. In a lot of cases, people aren't either ready to leave, don't know it's abuse because they're either replicating patterns from their family of origin, or they're just in horrible denial because it's shameful, or their children in that circumstance who have no power over anything that's going on. And those are the circumstances that are really difficult. I mean, I know of a few situations right now where, you know, it's not that somebody's textbook, you know, sort of the control abusive, there's a mental health issue that is being exacerbated by, you know, their routines have been disrupted. And when you disrupt the routines of somebody who is trying to claw back from mental illness, shit goes sideways. And so it gets into that thing of it's not their fault, but it is their responsibility. And so I want to take some time. Rose, I'll start with you and then move over to Michelle. What do you do if you're in these close quarters? It's not a I'm ready to leave yet, but you do sense that something is not right in your relationship.
Okay, so number one, under circumstances like this, it may not be the easiest time to leave.
Right.
Right.
Now, I do want to say support services are open. Crisis services are still open. You can call your local crisis support center, even if it's just to talk to somebody. Those services have been declared essential. They are open. There's extra health screening services, but they are there. I just want everybody to know that. Please go on.
And at the end of the day, if you have no other number or you don't know what to call, dial 211. You will get whatever information you need in Ontario.
211?
211.
Okay. 211.
Right.
So say somebody isn't comfortable doing that. Then
a lot of times in leaving a relationship, it's not something you jump up and grab your stuff and run out the door.
Right.
It's an internal realization that it's almost like you just wake up one day and you're like, you know what? I can't do this anymore.
Right.
When that experience of, you know what, I can't do this anymore, then that's when a strategic plan begins to start to be implemented, right? In this situation, I would say 211 is probably anybody's best friend.
Okay.
Because what people don't know is that there is services, especially in the outskirts of Toronto, not so much in Toronto, but in Peel, in Markham, in the Vaughan area, on the outskirts of the city of Toronto. There is organizations that are connected to the housing association that will support you in relocating you in the event that you are in an abusive situation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, unfortunately, like every other service, some of these services have been abused. So there was a time when you could have called and been like, look, I'm in an abusive situation, and they would like be able to jump on it. Mm-hmm. Because some people have taken advantage of the system, now you have to provide some type of proof. May that be a police report, a doctor report, something that can show that proof of the situation that you have been in. Mm-hmm. So if a woman is in an abusive relationship and goes to the doctor and has these bruises documented, that the doctor is not in a position to call the police unless there's a child who's also being abused in the situation.
Yeah, that I actually went with a friend, happened to be male, to document abuse, and it was just establishing a pattern. It's true, it's not, and that is so people do seek medical help. That's the reason for that. I looked it up, by the way. 211 is available across Canada. It's a different, except Prince Edward Island, apparently, and New Brunswick. So British Columbia, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Ontario, Quebec, Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, it says coming soon. 211 is run by the United Way. And it's everything. It's elder abuse. It's children stuff. I mean, Kids Help Phone is another thing that youth can call, right. But that's a good resource. You talked about a plan, Rose.
Yes.
Now, one of the things I actually find that gets people ready to take that step is creating that plan. So how does somebody...
Well, it starts with the mental realization, right?
Right.
And that rock bottom is different for everybody.
Yeah.
But it's literally...
Sorry, Rose, you suddenly got really quiet.
Oh.
There you go. That's better.
Okay. It starts with the realization, that moment that person is like, you know what? I can't do this. It's a rock bottom, a mental rock bottom. And it's different for everybody.
Yeah.
Right? But it's that feeling inside that, you know what, if I don't leave this situation, I'm either going to kill somebody or I'm going to be killed or something really bad's going to happen.
It unfortunately does usually have to get that bad.
Right.
Yeah.
And creating a plan can be something as simple as, you know what, I'm going to save an extra $20 a month.
Yeah.
Or $50 a month. I'm going to begin to change over some of my information to my girlfriend's house.
Right.
I'm going to talk to the school counselor at my children's school, letting them know. I'm going to start researching an area that I want to live in. I'm going to begin to look at resources. If my abuser lives in Toronto, maybe Hamilton will be a better place for me to be, where I'm completely out of the jurisdiction mm-hmm. where they are, so that I'm not easily accessible.
Yeah.
Right? Go ahead.
I saw a thing in Alberta that they actually said, they suggested for people in domestic abuse situations during COVID-19, come up with a safety word for text messages to your family and friends, that they know if you use this word that this is what's going on, because people's online and text communications can be monitored. And I'm like, yikes, you know, we are there.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, to be honest with you, abusers are some of the most masterful manipulators. Cowardly,
yeah,
masterful manipulators.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't start with a physical. It starts with a mental chip away at the soul.
That's what I want to get to with this. That it's that the thing I think is going to get significantly worse here is that emotional chipping away, because people are in close quarters. They don't have those escape hatches. Everything is staring them right in the face.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you have people who are frustrated. You know, right now there is no healthy outlet in regards to, you know, that football game or that hockey game that you can go down to the local bar and watch and scream and yell with your boys, or, you know,
that catharsis.
Like, Right.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be a football or a hockey game. It could be that knitting class for the woman, right? Because men are abused as well. So, you know, this is not taking one sex over the other.
Let's face it, it's going out Thursday night with your girlfriends and getting bombed on $12 mojitos.
Right.
Yeah. It's that kind of stuff that people can't do. They can't get those temporary escapes. Michelle, do you have anything to add to this idea of safety plans? Like,
well, you know, I think it's great in theory.
Okay.
I really do. And you know what? I have lived with domestic violence and I grew up watching domestic violence. And we talked about on other podcasts how, you know, and everyone keeps saying, well, you know what? There's still this stigma of why don't they just leave?
Right.
And it's really easy to say that, but for most of us who find ourselves in, you know, with intimate partner violence, it's because it's kind of all we ever knew. So we don't really see it as anything odd until we do. What scares me now, and I just saw this on my Facebook page today, exactly what you said is, you know, someone posted, one of my friends posted, if you are in a domestic violence situation or you're afraid for your life, message me asking about bread recipes and I will know you're in trouble and I will keep checking in with you.
Right.
And I read that and it's kind of like what you were saying, you know, like give me my code word. But the problem is if we're putting on our Facebook page, use the code word.
Yeah.
Bread recipes, well, our social media, if you're in that position, it means your social media is already monitored.
That's right. That's
so
right.
So sending out that message, yeah, and saying, hey, everyone, text me about bread recipes because someone is hurting you, that's not helping.
Yeah.
You know,
well, that's what Rose was talking about.
Yeah.
That abusers are, it's the manipulation.
And I think those, yeah, that have never been in that situation don't understand. Like they're trying to help. Their hearts are in the right place. They just don't understand how prevalent it is and how it's just in everything you do that is being controlled. It's like, oh, just text me. Well, you know what? That's not an option for a lot of people to just text somebody or, you know, use a code word. Although the intentions are great.
I'm gonna interject something,
yep,
here. In a lot of cases, they are great. In some cases, the people telegraphing that, like transmitting that, mass communicating that, are in and of themselves abusive personalities who are trying to collect vulnerable people.
Oh, I believe that. I, yeah, absolutely believe that. And especially with the person I saw this from today, it's a matter of, you know, it is. It's about, I want to be important. I want to be the person you lean on. Mm-hmm. And I actually responded and said, well, actually, if you have the ability to message and are in a, you know, domestic violence situation, our local shelter here in Brandon monitors their Facebook page. So instead of messaging friends,
yeah,
message them and get help or call 911.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, and Rose, I'm sure you'll have something to add here. Tell me if I'm on to something here, because this is just something I've observed as a lay person, but you've got expertise in this. People who are in abusive situations, often they're not only in one. People tend to replicate abusive patterns. So their home life might be abusive, but a lot of their friendships are either abusive or codependent, and someone who is being abused can also be abusing other people. And it's a cycle that sometimes requires an extraction from the entire social group.
Well, it depends, right?
Right.
So for example, let's take cultural identities into play here, right?
Okay.
Where in some communities, it's cultural for there to be abuse against women. You know, there's some cultures and communities where not only the man beats the woman, but the mother-in-law beats the woman or the father-in-law,
right,
beats the,
right,
woman as well, right?
Right. Well, that's one of the issues in China is they deny it's an issue.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's become a cultural norm versus that's it. It's a cultural norm, right?
And so, I mean, this was, I want to be clear. This was the norm in North America until, you know, second wave feminism brought it into light. This is where the whole the personal is political thing comes from. Before that, it was a private matter. If a guy was beating on his wife or a woman was beating her kids and so on and so forth. So this is new. The idea that this is a societal problem that people need to do something about. And you're right, I'll let you continue here, that message is not necessarily trickled down into many marginalized cultures.
Right.
Right.
So, you know, in those communities where that is prevalent and it's cultural, then it also becomes generational.
Yeah.
So you will have women who their entire circle, not only do they have to leave their circumstances, but they also have to leave their community
yep.
in order to be safe. Right?
Yep.
Which
oh, absolutely
causes a lot more problems because that's even harder to do. Now, not only am I leaving my house and, you know, my environment, I'm also having to let go of my community. So I truly, genuinely have nothing. And I have been told that I am nothing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that plays on the social, emotional, economical, spiritual. That's when the entire circumference of abuse comes into play on every tier level in a person's being.
Well, and yeah, that's really
profound. Yeah, sorry, Michelle, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and that's exactly the point that I was making when we talk about rural areas, mm-hmm. is that when you are looking at it from a rural perspective and you're talking about community, there's so many different ways to, you know, to think about community. It is social, and it's your family, and it's your history, and it's your friends, but it's also physical. And when you are living in a rural area where your entire community, you've been raised there, that's the only place yeah. you've ever known, and all of a sudden it's like, my only chance to get away from this is to actually leave and go to a place where I know no one. Mm-hmm. I've never been, you know, cities are scary. I still, to this day, I live in a town of 1,100 people just outside of Brandon, Manitoba, that has 50,000. Even the idea of living in Brandon is scary because it's 50,000 people, which you guys might laugh at because you live in Toronto. But coming from, you know, a community here in rural Manitoba, if all of a sudden I had to go to, you know, from my hometown of 300 and I had to travel 11 hours to get to a city, to a safe environment that has a shelter.
Yep.
Or if the next available shelter is only an hour away and everybody knows everybody in these communities, am I really any safer, right? We know that the biggest danger to someone's life, a victim of domestic violence, is at most risk when they decide to leave.
Yeah.
Them and their children, if they have some, regardless of whether it's men or women, this yeah. is gender non-specific. When they decide to leave a relationship, they're in the most dangerous of losing their life.
Yep.
And, you know, having a plan is awesome, but when that plan includes having to travel extensively, it just exasperates the issue. And I think what really terrifies me and what Rose was saying about, you know, having that plan and working it out long-term, is we don't see those options now during COVID-19. We're going to see some acceleration and some exasperation of, you know, the instances, because for a lot of victims of domestic violence, and I was one of them, it was like, okay, you can do whatever you want to me, but if you ever lay a hand on my child, that's the line.
Right.
And suddenly those children are home every hour. Every minute, there's no play dates, there's no playgrounds, there's no more yeah. going out. And all of a sudden, it's like that line is crossed, and I haven't planned for it because it's suddenly not a year away or 6 months away, it's today.
Yep.
That's what scares me.
And a lot of people freeze when yep. that happens. It, you know, people think it's fight or flight. It's not, it's actually freeze, fight or flight. And freeze is very common. And it's one thing to come up with a plan in your head. It's another thing entirely to act on that. It's really difficult.
Oh, the execution of a plan is the hardest part, right?
Well, especially that loops me back into, see, this makes me go in two different directions. One is the concept of identity. And I admit I've been learning more and more and more about how hardwired identity is in some people and how it factors into this stuff, talking about culture and stuff like that. But also, you know, this idea of planning anything in an environment of intense emotional manipulation. That's easier said than done.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially now.
Yeah. And
that's the difference.
This is where I kind of wanted to get, and we got here quicker than I thought we would, because a lot of the, let's face it, a lot of the services are available for you. They're platitudes. They're well-meaning platitudes, but they're platitudes, right? When I was a kid and working through some of this stuff, I was always, I could say to counselors, well-meaning people, well-meaning social workers, how do I do this thing you're telling me I need to do? And they had no answers.
So here's the reality.
Yeah.
Right. Let's get a little micro focused right now. Right. Yeah. If you are a woman that is experiencing abuse or has experienced abuse or is in an abusive relationship currently as we speak, and they are now in a confined quarters with this person who may now not be working or who may not be out of the house as they frequently were mm-hmm. before. What is your safe spaces?
Right.
So for example, do you have that room where if you needed to put a dresser in front of the door to protect yourself and your children, like it, let's start small, right?
Right.
Let's look at things, you know, do you have that neighbor that you can call or that person, that house that you can run to in case something happens?
Yeah.
Right? These are small things that we can begin to look at that, you know, all right, maybe you can't leave the building, but is there a neighbor? Is there somebody within your vicinity that you can trust if something happens? Right?
And in a lot of cases, the answer is no. Right? Because this is what I hate about the term social distancing. Social distancing, I like that they're switching it to physical distancing, because social distancing is what abusers do to their victims, right? Mm-hmm. You separate people from family, friends, anybody that would encourage a sense of empowerment. And so in a lot of cases, the first step, Michelle, what do you think about this? And Rose, feel free to chime in once Michelle's had her say. The first safe space that Rose referenced is in your own head.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think the turning point is when you realize this is not okay.
Right.
Right.
Because when you have either, this is a learned behavior. No one comes from a healthy, you know, a mentally healthy, secure, confident position and suddenly finds themselves victimized. Right. There is something there. And don't get me wrong. I don't mean that as victimized. I meant as a victim of intimate partner violence and long-term abuse. There's something there that in your brain says this is okay. Because for me and what I'm going from this, and I said it wrong, but for me, the first time someone hits you, if you are a happy, healthy, strong person who's never accompanied and never seen that before, you would step back and go, holy shit, something's wrong here.
Or you hit him back.
Or you'd hit him back. Yeah. Actually, you know what? Today, oh my God, that would be my go-to.
Say that because I was really surprised the first time that happened to me. I didn't think I'd be a person who'd take the retaliatory swing. But in that moment, oh God, I did.
Yeah. You know, and that's a natural response. You know, regardless of your gender, that's a natural response. When you say freeze, fight, or flight, those are those things. And yeah. I find that a really great example, because for me, it was years of freezing. It's like, you know what, this is normal to me. I watched my dad do it to my mom.
Yep.
I couldn't even imagine talking to my mom or dad about and saying, hey, you know what? My husband is hitting me, because that's what happened in my house. So it's normal, right? Like, why would I even talk about it?
I do want to touch on that though.
Yeah. I want to touch on that too, but Rose, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Lee.
Well, yeah. I was going to say the problem, and I want to be clear, the problem with the fight response is if you are at the mercy of a canny manipulator and you respond the way I did, learn from my experience, they turn around and make you seem like the abuser. So
and that's when you walk away, though. And that's where you...
What I did? I'm just saying it shocked the hell out of me that that actually was my response.
And I would never recommend that. Like, I never would, right?
Yeah, freezing is probably, in some ways, an act of self-preservation.
Oh, absolutely it is. You see it in nature, right? We just curl into a ball and wait for it to all go away. I mean, you know, living in the North, if you get attacked by a bear, that's what you do.
But that can go very different ways depending on the type of abuser that you have.
Exactly.
There's some abusers that actually get turned on by the freeze, and there's some abusers that get turned on by the fight.
Yep.
Right?
Well, and I was thinking more of freeze as staying.
Okay.
You know what though? Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not. Because sometimes it's that, you know, that sort of stereotypical loud. This is what I saw a lot growing up: is people would fight like cats and dogs, but it's not a healthy resolving a conflict kind of fighting. It's just brawling. It's just saying every horrible, hurtful thing you can possibly think to the other person. That's not effective arguing. That's not effective conflict resolution. That is just beating the emotional crap out of each other.
Yep.
And it's not healthy.
I think also we have to be very careful, because I've also heard a lot of women say, well, yeah, he hit me, but I hit him back. So, you know, I defended myself, and justify staying in a relationship because they defended themselves.
I've heard a lot of men say that too. I mean, that's right. The Johnny Depp Amber Heard thing, right? He hit her once, therefore he shoved her back once. All of a sudden they're equivalent.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, violence on any level is not okay.
No. And I think that's the big thing. That's the big message here that we need to send, that violence on any level, whether it's physical, mental, or emotional.
Or financial.
Or, oh yes, very good. You know, that's the type of toxic relationship that we are talking about, that it's not always, you know, it's not always the woman you see in the supermarket with the big glasses covering the black eye.
Yeah.
It could be the man at, you know, the man that we're working with on the construction site that has to check in with his wife every 15 minutes, or, you know, there are so many different ways. And that's what scares me during COVID-19, especially as finances get tight. There is no relief. The kids are not leaving the house. You know, no one's leaving the house. You know, we're all saying stay home, and we're forcing people to stay in close quarters together, where this toxicity, you know, and I think, Leanna, you nailed it. It's like, this is not going to cause domestic violence. This is not going to cause intimate partner violence, but it is taking away some of the elements that might have diffused it. So it's going to exasperate it.
Amplifies the irritation within the household.
Yeah, it's an emotional hotspot.
Absolutely, right?
It's just rubbing. It's bone on bone rubbing. It's relationship arthritis. I'm thinking about it. Wow, I got into physical altercations with two exes, and now I'm thinking about what led to that and the thought process I had with myself afterwards. And I realized now that was the moment where it was like, that's it, I'm done. Because when I hit this point, that means something's really wrong.
Right.
And, you know, I think there's that moment of honesty with yourself. One of the things I had to learn to break the whole cycle replicated since childhood. I've been thinking a lot about, there was a school strike that lasted, I think it was 2 weeks, but I have no idea, because when you're, you know, afraid for your mental, physical, and emotional well-being, you lose track of time. But, you know, I was a kid, and it was terrifying to be home during those periods. And that is when you start establishing the patterns of, well, this is normal, this is okay. Everybody goes through that, right? And at some point, you have to realize, no, not everybody goes through that. everybody's home life is not Leave It to Beaver. You know, it's not the perfected versions of people's lives you see on Facebook, or the exaggerated hot mess versions of people's lives you see on Facebook. The truth is somewhere in between. However, there are extremes that are just not healthy. And the thing I had to learn was that it was actually okay to want more than that. I wasn't being selfish. I wasn't being all that. I wasn't being arrogant. No, that's a healthy human urge to not want that to be your home life. And there's this lengthy period. And I think, Michelle, this ties in to what you were saying about people having to leave for the city and that being just horrible. I've heard that from many, many people who went from rural to more urban. Some people just can't adapt to the proximity. But the other thing, Rose, you were invoking sort of with that person who heard things were going on and didn't do anything. They just had to get away from it. Just because you leave a situation physically doesn't mean you leave it emotionally.
No, not at all.
It doesn't mean you have closure.
Well, I've got an example for you, Leanna, if you want to, you know, indulge me for a minute.
Yeah,
my first husband was abusive, and mm-hmm. I haven't seen him since 1998. He's actually dead now, but I haven't seen him since 1998. Mm-hmm. In between that time and 2009, mm-hmm. I had been remarried and had another child, and my life had changed.
Right.
And I married my third husband. There's a long story there. My second husband died too. Don't even ask me. Long story.
This on previous podcasts.
Yeah. So I married my third husband. But before we got married, when we were first dating, you know, my second husband was not abusive. He was mentally ill, mm-hmm. but he was not physically abusive. And I got into an argument with my now husband. And I was very emotional. We argue about once a year, to be honest with you. And this was our first real one. And I got really into his face. Like, I am emotional. I'm angry. I got into his face and I literally said to him, "What are you going to do? Hit me now." Because I was repeating past behaviors right. that I had seen in my family. And I had lived with my first husband, not even my second husband. 20 years later, mm-hmm. there was some emotional baggage where I was expecting this from a man in my life.
Right.
And he literally stopped dead and he said, "Oh my God, why would you say that? I would never."
Right.
"We need to talk about this because that is not me." And it literally changed the course of not only our relationship, but my life, because I realized how much of that baggage I was still hanging on to.
Well, because so he responded with caring instead of through his own trauma.
Absolutely. Yeah. Whereas, you know, we do carry that with us for years, decades sometimes. And unless we actually deal with it, it is still there. And that's when I realized I needed to deal with that kind of baggage before we got married. And I did. And that's, you know, and today I was thinking about this. We actually had a fundraiser. I went live on Facebook on Wednesday night. And we did a live auction for our local women's shelter. And we were live for 2 hours. And I had my 14-year-old daughter live with me. She wanted to join me. She wanted to talk about it. And we talked about domestic violence and the shelters and the need for this. And we had like conversations going. And I realized that, you know what, this is something that she feels for other people, but she's never, ever experienced. She's never lived.
Thank God. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I actually got emotional online when I realized that this girl is not talking about experience and she, God willing, will never experience it. And that is how that has changed. So the idea, and I think about it now that, you know, we're on this social distancing, physical distancing, mm-hmm. you know, I've had my kids home. We're on the end of week 3 now, that I couldn't imagine doing this with my first husband. Yeah. You know, like, oh my God, the world we would be living in would be so different. And we are creating this new reality. And so many people out there just don't realize what some people are going through. And well, that reality is so different.
I mean, that's a testament to the amount of work you've done on yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But it like, is
that's
taken
a real
literally,
achievement.
But it's been over 20 years.
That's short with this kind of work, Michelle.
Oh, you know what? And don't get me wrong. I'm not doing this self-deprecating thing. What I'm trying to get at is not tooting my own horn.
Right.
What I am saying is that for other people to look at and say, well, you know what, why doesn't she just leave? Or, and honestly, Rose, when I heard the story of your neighbor saying, I just want to move apartments because someone's getting beaten down the hall and I can't deal with it. That pisses me off to no end. And I know that it's not safe to go in there and bang on the door and say, okay, that's enough.
But call the police.
Yeah, but
what happened to it takes a village to raise a child? What happened to that?
That's not the world we're living in right
it
now.
It should be, though.
We live in the world, not my monkey, not my circus. That's the world we live in.
But you know what? That's what frustrates me.
I got to disagree with that. I think the problem is I don't want to think about the fact that this is a monkey that reminds me of my monkey.
Yes.
That's what I think is really going on.
Your monkey's too close to my monkey.
Yeah. There's a lot of ego covering up very, very fragile senses of self and fragile senses of identity.
I do not believe that anyone who is an emotionally, physically, or socially healthy position can listen or watch someone being hurt or beaten and take zero action.
Well, their action is moving. They took action.
They took a selfish action.
Yes, it's I don't believe it is truly in the long term an act of self-preservation. I mean, that's a flight response.
Yeah.
Which
I can see that.
Yeah. I mean, yes, it is a knee jerk. It's not thought out. It becomes thought out when they start researching what floor they want to live on because they don't want to deal with hearing it. It's out of sight, out of mind. And that is certainly on the one hand, Rose did say that this is a woman who's 8.5 months pregnant, correct, Rose?
Yeah.
I think I can give her a bit more grace because of that, because that does something to your brain. The only thing she may care about in that moment is the baby, right?
Like, no, absolutely. Maybe,
Sorry, Michelle and then Rose.
I'm just saying that, you know what? I think we're bending over backwards trying to give people an out here. It takes nothing, whether you are 8.5 months pregnant or not, to make a phone call or send an anonymous text. And I think that's the problem with social media. We've become this dissociated society where everything is just, and no offense to you, Leanna, but it's almost like everything's a video game. We are detached from it. And everything is just happening outside of
it. That's the way I deal, because I had to learn to stop hitting people in real life. No, I'm kidding. Michelle, that's exactly what I'm doing. Like, that's a really astute observation. In this case, it's deliberate. I am giving this particular person an out. Because to me, my own personal process, and this is my way of throwing it over to Rose, because I mean, she said some things in the past that kind of connect to this. Part of the thing that keep people stuck in abusive cycles is a lack of self-forgiveness. And when you come at your own sense of self, your own sense of identity in this completely unforgiving way, you end up replicating patterns, and I'm giving people way more chances than perhaps they deserve to give them sort of a safe landing ground to make a different choice. Like, I'm coming at this saying, I get why you did that. Consider next time there's a better way to go about it. Because, I mean, Rose, one of the major dynamics, correct, in abuse cycles is people are afraid of feeling judged. They feel shame. Shame keeps them stuck, and they replicate the patterns because they're denying it's abuse because they can't handle the identity of victim. Am I right there?
Yes, to a certain extent.
Right.
You know, here's the thing. Like I said earlier, abusers are very masterful.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't start, like, one of the things I have observed in my career, you know, you'll see younger guys will, like, grab a girl's arm and squeeze her arm, and she's laughing and he's laughing, but he's really hurting her. That's how it starts. It's slowly introduced as a norm and then progressively gets worse as time goes by.
That's become a societal level problem too, right? Like that has changed since I was a teenager and young adult. Because back when I was doing really extensive outreach work, the message was no means no, right? Say no. And this informs some of my past stories where people are like, oh my God, this is horrifying. I'm learning way too much about Leanna. The way I came up is don't be so afraid of him hitting you that you don't say no. Say no, because then you can say you said no, and if he hits you, we'll either hit him back or go to the cops, right?
Well, the whole introducing of that as them playing with them, they don't understand that's just the beginning, right? It starts off that way, and then one day you just get a backhand across your face because he was never truly playing with you in the beginning.
And
it usually starts off like that's one way of abusive grooming. The other way is that it starts mental. Oh, you're dumb, you're stupid, nobody's gonna want you, look at you, you know, you're fat, you're ugly.
Or they groom people with the expectation that they predict their desires, expectations, and behaviors.
Right.
That's a major marker. Like, why didn't you know I wanted this? How could you say that? You should know. Well, a person is responsible for communicating their own boundaries and needs, right? It's not your job to guess. And that's something that I see a lot, like, oh, he didn't read my nonverbal cues. Oh, well, she just should have known that I didn't like her. That's what I was thinking. She should have known she was pissing me off. He should have known. You know, he just made me so mad. All of these things are excuses, mm-hmm. right? All of these things are excuses for not being honest with yourself and being authentic with yourself, because you can't be honest, authentic, and healthy with other people until you're honest, authentic, and healthy with yourself. And I think, Michelle, this is why you're having such a strong reaction to this apartment parable, because you're way further ahead than most people.
Well, I think it's not so much that I'm further ahead. It's just that I've been there, done that, and come out the other side.
I consider that the same thing.
Well, maybe.
You leveled up. You invoked video games. I'm going to reinvoke video games. You have more experience points than the average player.
I so wish I didn't. I wish
now you're on my turf.
I wish this was some of that, you know, leveling up that I could have gotten from reading a fucking book. But
hey, there are some things you can learn from reading game manuals. That was what we did back in the day.
Yeah. Hey, I'm still on Animal Crossing. Give me a break.
Nice.
I think my reaction is a little bit visceral because I'm frustrated. I'm tired of, which is really weird for me because I spend my life on social media. And what I'm finding is that social media has changed people in a way that we are excusing society for things that we never would have turned our back on before. Whereas it used to be, you kind of knew that a neighbor, you know, she wore dark glasses and you just didn't ask any questions. Mm-hmm. Now we don't just, you know, kind of ignore the neighbor with the dark glasses who's getting the shit kicked out of her. We talk about her on Facebook, but we still don't call the cops or reach out to her. And I've seen that. And
there's a condescension. You're right. You're right. And it's funny. You're touching on something that happened to me just today, and it pissed me off. And I think you just made me realize why it pissed me off.
It pisses me off daily.
Well, we have turned victimization and healing into a performative artifice. I'm sorry, I just went back to like academic language. That's fancy way of saying we play at caring, mm-hmm. but we're really just too overloaded and tired to give a shit.
It comes, Yeah. Sorry.
Sorry. Go ahead, and then I'll tell the anecdote, and then I'll throw it over to Rose as well to let her.
It's exactly like I said with the Facebook post I saw today. Message me with your bread recipes because I want you to know that I care. Well, really, if you cared, you would find a way to actually reach out and help those that are really struggling right now, yeah, instead of posting something generic on Facebook for everyone to see that isn't actually going to reach the people or help the people that needs to be. But it's all about, look at me, look how much I'm, yeah, helping people, look how nice I am. And it really isn't, you know, we've created this society of look at me, I want everyone to think I'm helping and I, yes, think I care, when if you came up to me on the street, unless I had a, you know, a camera there for a selfie to document me feeding the homeless, I really don't give a shit. And that's what's pissing me off so much about this, is that we, unless everyone sees us do it, unless we can document it, we have turned into this society of me. And it's creating this, really scary environment for these, you know, people that are living on the other side, going, who can I really reach out to? Do I send you a message on Facebook? Are you going to take a screenshot of it, yeah, and post it?
Yeah.
Like, what are my options here? Which, by the way, I've seen happen too.
Oh, I've seen happen as well. I've seen happen numerous times. Everything is so performative. Everything is so artifice that people don't realize when they're doing something wrong anymore because, oh, they care, therefore they couldn't possibly. And that's just not life. Rose, I want to offer a concept up to you that I think kind of encapsulates what Michelle is saying. And I want to know your thoughts on this. What I'm getting from what Michelle's saying and what pissed me off about the exchange I had today is when everyone is jockeying to show how wrong they are, how oppressed or how victimized they are, it cheapens the whole idea of actually being exploited or abused to the point where it's almost like nobody takes it seriously anymore.
Well, I follow quite a few domestic abuse chat groups on Facebook.
Right.
And it's absolutely, I'm dumbfounded a lot of times with the things that I read. Mm-hmm. You know, he just passed me and he slapped me in my face, or, you know, just the different things that these men and women say, mm-hmm, and how broken they are. The reality of it is that hurt people hurt people.
Yep.
But what we don't talk about is that hurt people attract people to hurt them.
That's a tough lesson. And a lot of people have a very instinctive response to that because they feel like it's blame.
Well, it's a different type of hurt.
Yes.
Right? And it's being projected and attracted in two very different ways. Touching on the point that Michelle was talking about, yeah, with the, you know, saving grace people, as I like to call them, I remember several years ago going to see a theater production. Mm-hmm. And I also come from a slew line of watching and experiencing abuse in my life. Mm-hmm. And in this production, they did a complete reactment of a woman being physically abused.
Right.
There was no man on the stage, but, you know, it was real. Mm-hmm. You know, the drooling of the mouth, like she was beaten, even though she was the only one on stage when she did it.
Right.
And I was so triggered by this performance.
Yeah.
And at the end of the performance, the actors all stood up and said, yeah, and you know, if you're a woman out there experiencing abuse, you know, just send us an email.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I was like, is this a grant requirement?
Probably.
What just happened here?
Yeah.
That you would reenact something so dramatic, so real, so triggering to so many women, and think that the solution to this is offering an email.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And
And, you know, no discredit to the people who did it. I understand it's art, and I also understand that they may have had the best intentions. But those who've lived it understand it.
Yeah, that sounds like a cover your ass move to me, quite honestly.
Hey, I'm not here to debate what it was.
Right.
I just know what it did to me.
Well,
and I just remember leaving there and just being so traumatized by the experience. And, you know, a lot of times people have the best intentions. People have the ability to, they don't have the ability to understand what it takes from an emotional, mental, and physical place within one person to remove themselves from a situation that they're in. So they may think, you know what, I'm doing something good by offering the, you know, what was it, cookbook?
It was a bread recipe.
They may have the best intentions because they don't understand that, well, you've made it public. So now that you've made it public, you've taken away the ability for it to even be safe. People don't always think out everything they do, and they may still have the best intentions, just not even knowing that their intentions have been minimized by their actions.
Well, they're too busy running too, right?
Well, you know what? And I think this is where we forget the power of social media and the internet. And you've seen this. It's like, oh, ladies, if you are on a date and he's making you uncomfortable, ask the bartender for this drink or show them a black spot on your hand.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Every abuser out there just saw that too.
Yep.
So what good is this actually doing? You know what? If you really want to do some good, donate some time, donate some volunteer hours, donate some money to your local shelter, your local professionals that can actually provide the outreach, the resources, and the housing needed to get these victims safe, or at least make them understand that they can be safe.
I think something else that people can do.
Something as simple as, you know, because when you are in these types of situations, the anxiety and the nervousness is so on high. Mm-hmm. The simplest of things don't occur to you.
Yep.
Something is saving a helpline number in your phone under a different name.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Something as simple as that, that if you do call this line, it's under a different name in your phone, that if your abuser was to look at the phone and see that you called this number, they wouldn't necessarily know what it is.
And don't post on Facebook, save this number as, you know, Joe Black, because every time someone sees Joe Black pop out in your phone, they know it too.
Right.
I notice a lot of people are so busy projecting. People are so busy brand managing personally and so busy trying to show, look, I'm a good person, because secretly they feel the complete opposite. We've lost the art of listening. And it really always amazes me the number of people, male, female, everything in between and beyond, who I'll start a conversation. Yes, I'm going to bring up video games again. People, it's the only thing people can do, right? You could go to different parts of the world in a video game that you can't in the real world right now. But it'll start a conversation about a video game. And I never know how it gets there. But it's almost like somebody's brain relaxes, or it's just, it's a trust situation because they already feel like they're sharing. But all of a sudden, they'll tell me something really deeply personal. And I don't even know this person's real name. I don't know what town they live in. Sometimes they don't even know if they're male or female. But for some reason they're telling me intimate details of their life. And I just listen and ask them questions. And I think sometimes it's the fact that I don't know them in real life that allows them to do that. Right? And I really think that the best thing, the thing I have found empowers people more than anything, and not right away. Sometimes this can be a very upsetting question, but just asking someone, what do you want? And being patient with the answer. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and I think that's the big thing, especially when you're dealing with issues of domestic violence, they yep. might not want the violence to continue, but they want the relationship to continue.
Yep.
Because they don't know any different, right? And having that safe space, you know, reaching out and saying, someone is hurting me, you know that the automatic answer is going to be leave.
And that can make some people shut
down.
And
you might not want to leave. You know, you may yep. not be ready to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't even want to talk to people about it because you know what they're going to say and you don't want to hear it.
Right.
And that's where the anonymity comes. And I totally appreciate that video game analogy because it is anonymous. It is, you know what, I just want to tell somebody without them trying to fix it.
And also, I mean, video games, especially Japanese video games that function on multiple levels, there are a lot of sort of metaphors for abuse in a lot of games. And so it allows people to, and I notice people who are in an abusive situations, they do this a lot. They see something without saying it, and yet they're saying it very meaningfully. You know what I'm saying, Rose?
Yeah.
Like, they're telling you something about them and about their truth. It might not involve personal details, but they are telling you, if somebody gets really super upset about something in a video game, they're telling you something about them, mm-hmm. right? And one of the big issues I have with these sort of niche communities, especially on the internet that get demonized, is, you know, Rose, use the word triggered. A yep. lot of the time, people get triggered by any changes in, say, a remake of a video game because you've now gone in and desecrated something that made them feel safe as a child. And mm-hmm. they have an extreme, you know, from the outside, apparent overreaction to that. But that's something very true to them. And I'm really disturbed because it replicates what I saw back in Jane and Finch, right? Like these black and brown kids who are getting shut down in the same way over a hip hop track that meant a lot to them, that they weren't expressing their pain in ways that were acceptable to, you know, white middle-class society. I'm seeing it happen in these sub-communities now online. And Michelle saw firsthand what I have to do now, because if I get angry, I'm of no use to them. So I go and do, okay, let's give everybody the benefit of the doubt so we can just facilitate conversation here. Again, Rose, do you see where I'm coming from? Am I making any sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Because that's a real thing, especially with marginalized communities, that if you shut them down when they're telling you about something frivolous.
Well, I'm going to share something with you that okay. Michelle, just don't lose your seat. Okay. Forewarning you. Many years ago, I was called by a young girl that I was working with mm-hmm. to the hospital because she had gone into labor. Mm-hmm. And she was in an abusive relationship.
Yeah.
She was there, her best friend was there, her mother, her aunt, and the boyfriend showed up. So she's in labor. They have her in the delivery room with the heart, the straps for the heart monitors around her stomach mm-hmm. to keep track of the baby's heartbeat. The child's father came. He's making up a lot of noise. He wants to be alone with her. He wants some time. So, you know, we leave the room. He bit her.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
In the delivery room, to the point that he drew blood. It was bleeding. And I didn't know. The best friend came to me and she said, he bit her. I said, what? He bit her. Now this is she's helpless. She can't move.
Yeah.
I said, we have to tell the doctor. The best friend and I went to the doctor. Mm-hmm. And the doctor's response, now everybody else is black. Just gonna right. preface this. Everybody else is black. The doctor looked at me in my face and looked at the best friend and said, you know, maybe there's too many people here and you guys just need to give them some space.
Oh my God.
So those social stereotypes facilitated abuse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to leave.
And I just remember walking down University.
Yeah.
Like in a fog, because I could not believe what I had just experienced. I think, and I was much younger at the time, I think if that had happened now, I would have called the police. I would have called the medical board. I would have made so many calls. Mm-hmm. Because how dare you? She's just been physically assaulted. And she's bleeding mm-hmm. on a delivery table. And you're telling me that the solution to this is for us to leave? Because you're afraid of him? No. Yeah. To make a long... Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, to me, it doesn't sound like he was afraid. To me, it sounded like he just has such low expectations of particular people that it's normalizing abuse, right?
Right.
And that's what I was going to say, that yeah. that's exactly what it was. And Rose, don't beat yourself up for that, because when you know better, you do better.
Oh, absolutely.
And we've all been in positions where you look back and go, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't say anything, or I can't believe I didn't do anything, or what the hell is wrong with me? But we change and we grow and we learn from those experiences. And as soon as you're telling me that story, my eyes are tearing up. And all I can think about is, this was a man. This was not a man, because it could be any gender, but this was an abuser who was losing control.
Oh, yeah.
She was there. She was in the care of professionals. She had her friends, her family, and he suddenly wasn't in control. And yep. biting her was a way to re-exert
yep.
his dominance and his control over her.
I think you're spot on there, Michelle, because
he kept on saying, like, even when I went in the room to talk to him, he's like, yeah, but she doesn't understand. What about me? And it's like, yep. this is not about you. She's in labor.
Yep.
Well, and that's what scares me about this COVID-19 thing is, you know, I'm so fortunate. You know, we've been homeschooling 3 kids. We've been both working from home. We've got a large home. We have separate spaces. And all I've been thinking about the last couple of weeks, and one of the reasons I reached out to our local shelter, is what if this happened to me 20 years ago?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. How fucked would I have been?
Well, this is
how fucked would my kids have been?
Yeah. This is why I wanted to do this podcast and I wanted to do this topic, because I just want, even if it just gives somebody some catharsis, if it gives somebody something other than, like I said off the top, platitudes, like more than that, that's something. You know, if it causes somebody to question perhaps why they're taking out their own stress on another person, that's another thing I'm majorly invested in. If people walk away from this with any single message, and we'll do final thoughts here. So I'll say my first thing, and then Rose will go to you, your final message you want to leave people with, and then Michelle will go to you. I want people to realize it is a choice to lash out at another person. The feeling, what you are feeling, is not a choice and it's not your fault. But there are multiple ways of expressing any feeling you could possibly have. You do not have to take that out on another person. That's where I want to leave it. Rose, what's your final message?
My final message for both men and women out there is that abuse is not okay. Mm-hmm. If you fight back, it doesn't make it okay. If the person says sorry, it's not okay. If you are in a physical, emotional, mental, financial, even spiritual abusive situation, do some research of your own. Mm-hmm. Join a couple of groups on Facebook. There's the cycle of abuse. Look up the cycle of abuse and on Google and look at the images. Chart yourself. Begin to do some self-assessment of where you are, and then begin to figure out how you can get out of your situation or what support you need in order to do that. Make a plan. It doesn't have to happen today or tomorrow, but once you begin to understand that you matter, that plan begins to manifest itself and the support will come.
That's very true. Michelle?
I think that right now in, you know, our physical distancing and social isolation that goes along with COVID-19, that we need to realize that things are going to happen and things are going to really happen fast. And if you are in a situation where you are afraid that things are going to escalate, if you are afraid for your own safety, and if you think your children are at risk, act before it happens, because everything happens so fast here that you don't want to be having to deal with things after the fact. There is help out there. Shelters are available. Resources are available. You have to make that call. You know, if you're going to be messaging or texting anyone with code words, make it to 911, make it to 211, make it to your local shelter, and don't wait until, you know, this passes or things get better. We're in this for the long haul. There is no going back to the way things were after COVID-19. And I think people need to realize that there's going to be a whole new normal here. Things are never going to be the way they were. So don't wait, because we do that. We say, oh, it's just not bad enough yet. Mm-hmm. Don't wait for the yet, because you might not survive it. Your children might not survive it. Just get the fuck out now. And, you know, like Rose says, make a plan, call people, get things in action. And if it means, you know, those 5 minutes that you're in the bathroom with your cell phone, do it. I would rather see you take that chance than to live with the escalation of what's going to come your way if you just wait. And that sounds scary. And I don't mean to be, you know, dramatic, but we've just seen it happen too much in the regular course of things. And yeah, then all of a sudden we're putting all these extra stressors. We've got physical, you know, isolation, we've got economical pressures, we've got uncertainty, we've got stress, and abusers are going to be looking for an outlet. And yep, don't be that outlet.
All right, ladies, thank you so much. Rose, Michelle, this has been the Hey Ladies podcast on the FU Network, funetwork.tv, wherever you get your podcast. Check us out. Check out our store. Check out Michelle's Keeping It Real podcast. But stay healthy, stay safe, stay sane, and wash your hands when you're done listening to this podcast. I don't know why, just wash your hands a lot. All right, ladies, thanks so much, and thanks to you out there for listening.
This is fun! The FU Network!